Surely abortion should be allowed when the child is diagnosed with a really intense, profound, and painful medical diagnosis. This is what I'm going to be responding to today. Stay tuned. Hi, folks. Welcome back to the Pro-Life Guys podcast, a show dedicated to equipping you with the tools that you need to have compassionate and compelling conversations about abortion so together we can change minds, save lives, and transform our culture. My name is Cam. I am the host of the show. It is a joy to have you along for the ride. We are getting away from American politics today. I've had a number of episodes of late about American politics. We've had Mark Harrington from Created Equal on to talk about the state constitutional amendments that were that are coming up south of the border. I've had Sam Say on to talk about his experience living in Ohio and experiencing an American election firsthand. I've talked to a number of other topics. How do you navigate when Trump and other politicians come up in your conversations? Today, we are getting back to more pure pro-life apologetics by talking about what do we do when in conversation, often maybe even with a loved one, friend or family member, maybe a coworker, somebody that we actually have a relationship with, brings up the experience of a child with disability. And we're going to be tackling that. I do want to give a shout out to our upcoming Pro-Life Action Conference. If you haven't seen it yet, start following me on social media. I know that I don't do a whole lot on social media, but I am really excited about this upcoming Pro-Life Action Conference that CCBR is hosting with Allies, another pro-life group here in Alberta, Canada. It is November 7th to 9th at Bethel United Reformed Church here in Calgary. I'm really looking forward to that. I'll be giving a couple of talks. I'll be giving a talk on metrics and setting SMART goals in the pro-life movement. I'll be giving a talk on in vitro fertilization, and I'll be giving our kind of flagship pro-life apologetics talk. My colleague Jonathan Van Maren will be there. Mike Schutten from ARPA Canada. Alex Schadenberg from Euthanasia Prevention Coalition of Canada. Gabrielle Johnson from Allies, a number of other really, really exciting speakers. Ted Fenske will be talking all about the abortion pill crisis in Canada. If you don't have your tickets, check it out. We just did a massive price drop because of the generosity of a number of sponsors and supporters. So do check that out. Without further ado, let's talk about this. And it comes to mind, I know that I've done an episode on this before, a number of months, maybe even a number of years ago now. It came up for me. I was doing a presentation this past Saturday, so I'm recording on Tuesday here in October, end of October here. I was giving a presentation this past weekend for a women's group at a church in Calgary here. And while I was giving the presentation on apologetics, working through many of the hard circumstances that mothers and fathers are faced with, one of the participants put up her hand and she shared her personal experience. She said that she was from the Philippines, and when she was married, her husband, who was not a Christian, really wanted her to promise that if they had a child with disabilities, that she would have an abortion. And she knew that abortion was wrong. She knew that this was a living human, a valuable human. But her husband pressed her because he argued that a child with disabilities would complicate their lives, would force them to live a different life than they wanted to. They wouldn't have as much time for each other. They wouldn't have as much time for other children or for travel or for all of these other things. And therefore, he wanted her to promise that she would never, if ever she found out that she was having a baby with a disability, that she would have an abortion. And tragically, this woman revealed that for the sake of her marriage, she agreed to this. And she just prayed fervently to God that she never had a child with disabilities. And she shared joyfully that her prayers were answered, that she has five children, that none of them were diagnosed with any disabilities, and therefore abortion never needed to happen. She shared this, and not only myself, but many of the other ladies around the room, myself not being a lady, but I was the presenter for the day, were taken aback by this. And how do we navigate this and similar kind of questions or concerns with charity, but also with clarity, right? I mean, I do think that it's absolutely appropriate to pray that our children are healthy and safe and do not encounter pain and suffering, whether that be through disability, whether that be through accident or other harm. It is absolutely good and fair and appropriate to pray for that. And I think that to put it on the opposite side, I think that it would be at the very least strange, if not inappropriate, to pray for our children to endure pain and suffering and calamity and hardship and harm. It would be weird, if not inappropriate, if not absolutely inappropriate, to pray for a child with disabilities, right? And so while I think that it's absolutely appropriate to hope and pray that our children are safe, that they're healthy, that they do not encounter pain and suffering, that this is a reality, and that, I mean, in many ways, we can look in whether or not that's a massive red flag in that marriage. I don't know much about the marriage. I didn't want to put this woman on the spot too much during the presentation. But I think it's important for us to recognize some of the background. I'm going to talk through some background. I'm going to talk through what not to do. And then I'm going to wrap up the episode with what we should do. Not because I am trying to trick you into sticking along for the long haul. Feel free to skip ahead, especially on the YouTube channel. I'm going to put these in chapters. And so if you don't have much time and just want to skip ahead to what you should do, absolutely do that. But I think that it's important to build up the background and clarity around what we should not be doing, to offer greatest depth towards what we ought to be doing, as it were. So what I want to start by talking about background-wise is that disability, pain, and suffering are very real, right? I think that an error that we make in the pro-life movement is sometimes to counteract our culture's interpretation that disability is entirely disabling and that you literally have no quality of life or opportunity. I feel like our culture wants to make the case that even minor disabilities are absolute hindrances from living a good life. And therefore, if your child is diagnosed with cleft palate, if your child is diagnosed with minor conditions, if your child has two toes that are webbed together or something like this, then they're just going to be bullied and have a terrible life and ruined, and you should have an abortion and try again. I feel like at times the pro-life movement and Christians try to counteract that by swinging the pendulum too far in the opposite direction and falling into the trap of suggesting that disabilities are not ever a hardship, that Oh, well, it's a very minor surgery to address a cleft palate. I feel like one that I hear very often is about Down syndrome, and people saying, well, have you ever met somebody with Down syndrome? These are the happiest people in the entire world. They live in pure joy and bliss. And we try to use that as a Trojan horse for all of the cases that do have profound pain and suffering. And I think we see this not only for preborn children, but for born children as well. While studying in university, I did some bioethics courses, and we studied a lot of cases to challenge the case law around euthanasia and assisted suicide at the time, because I'm really old. Even in a liberal university like the University of Victoria, the philosophy department and the bioethics class were very critical and outright condemning of the actions of somebody like Robert Latimer, who, for those who may not be familiar with the story, tragically killed his daughter, who experienced disability. And he pled that his daughter was living a miserable life, that she had poor quality of life, and therefore it was a mercy killing, that he was actually doing his daughter a favor. And horrified by this, many pro-lifers scrambled to only highlight statements that his daughter had given in the months leading up to her tragic death, that, well, she had very good days. She had days where she enjoyed life. She had this, she had that. Absolutely, we need to highlight the joys of life as well and not just reflect upon the hardships and difficulties. But I feel like at times pro-lifers ignored the hardship and suffering that Tracy, Robert Latimer's daughter, was encountering, and not actually addressing the crisis that Robert so heinously tried to solve through an awful solution. I think that we need to get to the heart of this and acknowledge the fact that many disabilities do lead to tremendous pain and suffering for the child, for the patient, for the victim, for whomever, whether it is a genetic condition, whether it is an accident that they encounter during pregnancy, after pregnancy. I have met children who live with cerebral palsy. I know people with fetal alcohol syndrome. I know people who, through lack of oxygen because of an umbilical cord being wrapped around their throat, and oxygen deprivation or other concerns like that, have different abilities here, there, and everywhere. And we need to acknowledge that. We need to acknowledge that there is tremendous pain and suffering, and dare I say that that tremendous pain and suffering can lead to tremendous suffering for parents as well, right? I think that we need to, while obviously not agree with parents who want to kill their children because they are faced with suffering, we need to empathize with the fact that that is an incredibly strenuous experience for any parent to sit up in a hospital room and witness their child suffering in pain very regularly, if not constantly. I think that that is a very real situation and not something that we can resolve with a throwaway line of, we'll just offer it up kind of thing. Yeah, absolutely. We can relate and identify with the incredible people in the Bible and through Christian history kind of thing. We can look at Mary, the mother of Jesus, and how she was at the foot of the cross watching and experiencing and witnessing all that happened there. Certainly we can identify with that, and we can find solace and comfort and reflecting in the courage that these people had, but that doesn't undermine the reality that this is incredibly difficult emotionally to witness that experience, let alone to have all of the other additional, often pragmatic scenarios. When you have a child with disabilities in a NICU unit, there is limited resources and funding and support for those parents, and limited opportunity for them to take time off of work, and how are they going to make ends meet for their other children, and all of the stress and all of the hardship that goes into that. I think that we need to empathize and appreciate just how much strain and stress they are under. I'm going to go even one step further, and this might ruffle some feathers. I think that we can also empathize and sympathize with medical professionals, right? We can often, okay, well, I can empathize with the victim, I can empathize with the parents and caregivers of the victim, but there's no excuse for the nurses and doctors and hospital staff that might be advocating for abortion or for euthanasia or whatever it may be. And we can have a purely critical and condemning approach to them as well. And while, again, I'm not suggesting that what they're doing is appropriate, not suggesting that their solution is correct or true or good or appropriate in any way, I think that we can also empathize with the strain that they are put under, because every moment that a doctor or a nurse or a medical professional is attending to one patient, there's another patient with whom they are not attending, right? That there are crazy long wait lines in many different jurisdictions, whether here in Canada with healthcare, whether in America without the same kind of healthcare, whether around the world, that there's always a mutual exclusivity that goes into patient care, that any time that you're spending with one patient is a moment you're not spending with another patient. And there are nurses and doctors and hospital administrators who are looking at this from a somewhat utilitarian standpoint of how is an hour of a physician or nurses or other medical professionals' time best served towards the community? How do they impact the lives of the most people? How do they benefit and protect and serve as many people as possible? These are real conversations that they are having, that they ought to be having, and they are dealing with an awful lot of trolley scenarios of a moment spent with this patient that I know will die is a moment not spent with another patient that I might be able to protect and might be able to survive. Those are difficult dilemmas. those difficult dilemmas are not solved by killing patients. Let's be clear about that. We don't kill humans to solve problems. We don't kill humans to solve economic problems. We don't kill humans to solve medical backlog problems. We don't kill humans to solve the emotional and psychological and physical problems that patients and parents are dealing with. But I think that's important to recognize that that is the background. And so with that, section two is what not to do. Let's not be angry either at the patients, if we talk about euthanasia and assisted suicide. Let's not be angry at them for desiring assisted suicide or euthanasia. Let's not be angry at the parents of preborn children for desiring an escape from this scenario. Let's not be angry at the medical professionals for being willing to facilitate, or dare I say, even offering or encouraging parents to consider abortion, euthanasia, or assisted suicide. Anger directed towards people is not going to serve the ultimate goal of protecting that child. We need to certainly be angry at our fallen world, certainly be discontent and frustrated with the fact that these situations present themselves, and disappointed that these are being presented as appropriate solutions. But again, if we consider the fact that even in these scenarios, I forget who the quote belongs to, but for the American leader who said, mothers, and in this case, I would say parents, do not want abortions like they want a Ferrari or an ice cream cone. Mothers want abortions like an animal caught in a trap wants to gnaw off their own leg to escape. This is what is being experienced by many of the parents, by many of the medical professionals, by all those involved in the situation. They're seeing themselves caught in this dilemma, and they just desperately don't want to be there. They don't want to be witnessing this. They don't want to be caught in the crosshairs of this profound pain and suffering. And so we're not going to be angry, and we're also not going to try to refute. I feel like so often pro-lifers are prone to suggesting, oh, you were told by your doctor, by your ultrasound tech, by whomever, that your child might have Down syndrome, this condition, that condition, whether seen through an ultrasound, whether through measurements, whether through anything else. Well, you know what? They're wrong all the time. Therefore, you should not have an abortion in case they're wrong. No, that's not an appropriate attitude to go into this with. Sure, at times they are wrong. I know people who have been told by their doctors, your child is most likely going to be disabled or have this genetic condition or physical or mental or whatever condition. They're born and they were very healthy, and praise God for that. The argument isn't don't have an abortion because your child might not have disabilities. It's not don't have an abortion because your child might be normal, because that kind of sets up a, well, I didn't have the abortion hoping and praying that my child was normal. And all of these normals, obviously in air quotes, because what truly is normal, especially when we're made in God's image and likeness, but I'm not going to dive too far into that. I don't want to set up a situation of resentment towards, like, Cam, you told me not to have the abortion because you thought that my child might not have a disability. They do have a disability, and now I'm frustrated that I didn't have the abortion. No, that's not the solution. So what are we going to do? What we are actually going to do is we're going to build common ground. We are going to empathize. Maybe we're even going to share a personal experience or encounter that we've had or somebody that we know have had. I agree with you that this is a profound difficulty and a very real situation that so many parents are faced with. And it demands and deserves better responses. This isn't to say that nurses and doctors, medical professionals are not working hard enough, but rather that we need to continue having breakthroughs in this realm when it comes to pain management, when it comes to empowering a high quality of life and managing all aspects of life, not just the physical pain, but the psychological, spiritual, emotional components of the human person. I agree with you that there is hardship and suffering and real problems here. And then we're going to offer an analogy. Imagine that a born child was encountering a similar situation, whether it was something that developed naturally because of a genetic condition, or whether through accident or other intervention, that a child was now living with pain, and because of that suffering, how would we respond? would we ever suggest we kill a born child because they are experiencing pain and suffering? As we've talked on the show before, if they say yes, we test the limit. We see how far that extends. And at times, we might even go down the route of what we call the be-inspired route. And in this analogy component, we are going to explore that while we can empathize with the desire to have this person not experience pain and suffering, how do we reflect upon people like and the decisions of Robert Latimer, who wanted to be out of that situation and wanted to be away from the pain and suffering of his child, and so he killed his child, versus the response of somebody who cares for and provides for their child, maybe even through adulthood, and the profound sacrifice and love that is shown and exhibited and lived by those people. And so through our analogy, we can demonstrate the principle that we don't kill humans to solve problems, we can test a limit by drawing that out to an older and older child with a less and less profound disability, and test a limit and ask why some humans' lives are worth living and others are not. We can invite them to be inspired and therefore empowered by the heroic sacrifices of those around them. We can invite them to share about people in their own life who heroically sacrificed for them, whether in a identical way, whether you know somebody who has a disability and thinking about their caregiver, or whether reflecting on hardship that isn't motivated by disability or medical scenarios, but rather, you know, people who have made tremendous sacrifices through financial difficulty or through other strains and stresses upon them and their family, to inspire them that way, and then to ask that pivot question of, if we don't kill born humans, if it wouldn't be appropriate to have killed this person or that person that we have spoken about in that scenario, then why is it appropriate to kill this other human? And I think that in this scenario, more than any, we really need to demonstrate our empathy, not only because on the surface, it looks as though we are the hardened and unreasonable people that are not willing to make any kind of quote-unquote concession for the well-being of a child, you know, just allow them to be put out of their misery. I'll do a whole nother episode, and I'll bring on, hopefully, Alex Schadenberg again to talk about the support and intervention that is available. And this isn't to say that these children don't get any pain management or suffering support or whatever it may be, that we need better support for parents and for children in all of these scenarios. But we don't achieve that by directly and intentionally killing an innocent human being. The last thing that I want to do here is I want to read an essay written by Emily Pearl Kingsley. I will drop the link in the show notes below, and I fully encourage you to check this out for yourself as well. It's a one-page essay that I'm going to read here because I think that it captures in a very human way the experience that many parents encounter when faced with a difficult prenatal diagnosis, whether it's prenatal or whether it's after the child is born. I think that this beautifully captures that and offers insight and reflection that we can have. And so full credit to Emily Pearl Kingsley. Find it online. I'll drop the link in the show notes below. This is the essay. I am often asked to describe the experience of raising a child with a disability, to try to help people who have not shared that unique experience to understand it, to imagine how it would feel like. It's like this. When you're going to have a baby, it's like planning a fabulous vacation trip to Italy. You buy a bunch of guidebooks and make your wonderful plans. The Colosseum, the Michelangelo David, the gondolas in Venice. You may learn some handy phrases in Italian. It's all very exciting. After months of eager anticipation, the day finally arrives. You pack your bags and off you go. Several hours later, the plane lands and the stewardess comes in and says, "Welcome to Holland." "Holland," you say. "What do you mean, Holland? I signed up for Italy. I'm supposed to be in Italy. All my life I've dreamed of going to Italy." But there's been a change in the flight plan. You've landed in Holland, and there you must stay. The important thing is that they haven't taken you to a horrible, disgusting, filthy, full of place full of pestilence, famine, and disease. It's just a different place. You must go out and buy new guidebooks. You must learn a whole new language, and you will meet a whole new group of people you would never have met. It's just a different place, it's slower paced than Italy, less flashy than Italy. But after you've been there for a while, and you catch your breath and you look around, and you begin to notice that Holland has windmills, and Holland has tulips, Holland even has Rembrandts. But everyone you know is busy coming and going from Italy, and they're all bragging about what a wonderful time they had there. And for the rest of your life, you will say, yes, that's where I was supposed to go. That's what I had planned. And the pain that will never, ever, ever, ever go away, because the loss of that dream is a very, very significant loss. But if you spend your life mourning the fact that you didn't get to Italy, you may never be free to enjoy the very special and very lovely things about Holland. Thank you. May God bless you abundantly wherever you're at and however many hours are left in your day.